just when you thought the New York Knicks did the right thing, somehow they still managed to do the wrong thing. And Eli Manning is back from the depths of hell. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A.O.B. And please pardon my fresh as we bring you all a new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, December 9th, 2019, and you can find us every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. You can also find me and Mike lurking around on social media, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. And if you got any questions, listeners, that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this show, you can shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com. You can send them directly to the website, or you can send them through social media, Twitter, and Instagram, as we're both checking those as well. And sometimes I have conversations with listeners or questions, or I answer questions from listeners that they send through social media. So please feel free to do that as well. Listeners, as always, another great show for you as we come back from a Thanksgiving holiday. We're going to talk some New York Knicks as the Knicks fired their head coach, David Fizdale. But in my opinion, not only should they have fired David Fizdale, but Steve Mills and Scott Perry should have been shown the door as well. We're going to talk about that as well. We're going to talk some New York Giants as Eli Manning is making a start later this evening. And Daniel Jones is not playing because of an injury. Is it really an injury? Me and Mad Mike seems to think that it's more of a benching, but that's their way of saying, no, he's injured, so you won't point the finger at us. And it's like, wow, that was a terrible pick that you made. We're going to talk some baseball as all signs are pointing towards Gerrit Cole signing a contract with the New York Yankees. So we're going to give our thoughts and other things as well. So as always, listeners, just buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Ayo! Let's get it!
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm at the airport about to hit the road, about to do it to myself and follow these Knicks on the West Coast trip.
Listen, first off, let's wish all the listeners a happy Thanksgiving. You know, we didn't do a show the weekend, the Monday after Thanksgiving because of the, you know, festive holiday. So me and the Mad Mike want to wish all our listeners and your families a happy Thanksgiving. But let's roll up our sleeves and get down to business, Mad Mike. As I was saying, if the Knicks could do something right and still get it done the wrong way and still do something the wrong way. And here's what I mean by this, listeners. Hear me out. And hear me out good. The great Clyde Frazier, okay? New York Knicks great Clyde Frazier once said these words that were proudly presented outside Madison Square Garden. And he said, basketball is a city game and Madison Square Garden is the Mecca. That, listeners, has not been true for a long, long time. And may never be true again. May never be true again. That's facts. Okay, the Garden at this particular point in time, in my opinion, is the Mecca of mess. Plain and simple, the 4-19 Knicks are a dysfunctional wasteland. Dysfunctional wasteland. The day, okay, listeners, the day after firing David Fizdale, Knicks president Steve Mills, and general manager Scott Perry, remained in hiding Saturday night. The Knicks didn't address the media after they lost to the Pacers when a $63 million man couldn't hit two free throws. Okay? Well, 0.01 seconds remaining. And that would have sent the game into overtime. Instead of that, they had intern coach Mike Miller, who I'm going to touch up on Mike Miller in a second, listeners. They left him to address the media before and after the game. Really? Mike Miller. Do you know who Mike Miller is, Mad Mike?
I know that he's been a coach in their G League system.
Right. That's about it. And when I said I'm going to break down something to you about Mike Miller, let me tell you something, Mad Mike. Let me tell you something, listeners. When Mike Miller was coaching a G League team, I used to go to the G League games all the time. And I was cool with about six or seven players on the team that Mike Miller coached. And you want to know what those players had? Absolute zero respect for him. Zero. Zero respect. And I'm talking about players that once played in the NBA. Now, I'm not going to name names because I'm not going to incriminate anybody like that. That's not my style. But trust me when I say I had that much of a personal relationship with these guys. And I'll never forget, Mad Mike. I was sitting on the bench, like not the bench, but I was sitting in a floor seat because that's where I always sit. And this was before the fans came into the game and the players were warming up, taking shots. They would always see me. They would always come down and sit and chill with me for about 5 or 10 minutes while they were warming up. And each and every player that I spoke to had nothing good to say about Mike Miller. And this is who's coaching his team now. Now, to be unfair.
Well. Go ahead.
It'd be unfair to say that we should hire Mark Jackson or Jeff Van Gundy or anybody else at this particular point in time. Let this team take its lumps. Let them take their lumps. But a clueless and gutless is no way to go through life. But that is exactly what the Knicks are doing.
Well, I'll tell you this. One, and we have it on good word. One of the reasons, maybe the biggest reason, Mike Miller is the coach. First of all, let's ask, why was Mike Miller even on this coaching staff? David Fizdale didn't want him. He wasn't David Fizdale's choice. Allen Houston wanted him on the big team's coaching staff. We can't have that anymore. Allen Houston is what? Assistant GM, G League, whatever the hell his role is. That's the only reason Mike Miller is the coach now. There's too many people with a say in this process. Not only that, but, I don't even know what to say to it. Like, why does Allen Houston have a say in this? Not only that, but if we're going to continue to ride these veterans the way we're doing, what the hell do we need Mike Miller for anyway? You just finished saying to everybody, he came from the G League. If he has respect of anybody, it's only going to be the youth. And we're not playing the youth.
And he doesn't, that's my point. He doesn't even have respect for them. I don't know about the current, I don't know about Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson. I'm talking about players that were on this G League team that he actually coached. Not only that, Mad Mike and listeners, how many times, listeners, have me and Mad Mike said to you that they needed to fire every single person that from the president on down? Obviously, Dolan is not going anywhere. So we're stuck with Dolan. So Fizdale got fired, and right, I would say that he deserved to be fired. But why not fire Scott Perry, and why not fire Steve Mills? Because they're the ones that orchestrated this roster for Fizdale to coach.
Well, Lloyd, let's talk facts. Steve Mills' record in his first six seasons with the Knicks, prior to you know, I guess they had the sex scandal and everything, right? With Marbury, he was 183-309. The four seasons without Steve Mills, the Knicks went to the playoffs three times. They won a division title on a 54-28 season and got out of the first round. That was the year they lost to the Pacers in the second round. He then returns right after that season. Legitimately, right after we won a division, then went to the second round of the playoffs with Carmelo Anthony, Tyson Chandler, and Amari Stoudemire. Steve Mills returns that offseason. The Knicks have gone 163-329 since.
I mean,
what's that tell you?
I mean, Matt Mike, can you think of any other team that fired a coach and then not addressed the change in any way?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, I'll agree with you there too, because that Fizdale situation, that was a huge hire. I think we were all in agreement that was the biggest hire that this franchise has had in the last since Van Gundy left, because we knew they were going young. We had said it. Jeff Hornacek wasn't brought in to develop the youth, and Fizdale was. We knew what this was. There's nothing in his record that says he's who everybody else, Popovich, Kerr, LeBron James, and Wade. There's nothing in his record that says that he's that guy. As a matter of fact, there's everything in his record to tell you that he's everything but that guy, right? Because he didn't do anything with Memphis. He ruined relationships with his players in Memphis. You know what I mean? So it's like, well, if you're being honest, when you look at the whole thing, nothing that, just because LeBron tells you somebody can coach, don't mean they can coach. How many times have we seen? I mean, yeah, I understand that we probably didn't give him the best lot of players. But remember something. He came in here and he said, I can coach Lance Moutier. He came in here and he actually said it on whatever that show is with Paul Pierce and them. This kid is a real star. He's a real talent. About Lance Moutier, before he even had the Knicks job, look that up. He said it. And he couldn't do anything with
Emmanuel,
Lance Moutier.
Man, Mike.
Right. I'm sorry, Emmanuel Moutier. Then he had what's this dude? Kevin Knox. The Knicks, it just came out 2 weeks ago. Knicks didn't want anything to do with Kevin Knox. The Knicks actually wanted Mikal Bridges. Hey, they wanted Mikal Bridges. And he convinced them that Kevin Knox was the next Kevin Durant. Why? Because he has the same body type? What did Kevin Knox show you in college that made you think that he could be Kevin Durant in the NBA?
Absolutely nothing.
And what did this coach show you to tell you that he could develop a player?
Absolutely nothing.
Kevin Knox's second year that he has to bench him? Without even a conversation, which is another problem, right? Because remember something. Kevin Knox got benched with not even a conversation from his coach. Isn't that why DeAndre Jordan got upset last year? Isn't that why Enes Kanter got upset last year? Isn't that what caused his player relationships to fall apart in Memphis? The lack of communication?
The Garden has become the saddest sports venue in New York and New Jersey. And that's saying something considering the despicable football that's being played by the Giants and Jets. And Fizdale was fired Friday in amateur fashion. Plain and simple. Not saying that me and Mad Mike don't feel that he deserved to be fired, but it was the way he was fired. And he became another failed experiment at the Mecca. He was set up to fail.
I'll tell you this.
He was set up to fail, Mad Mike, by Mills and Perry.
A lot of people are upset with the way he got fired. He was forced to coach, practice, you know, this and that. But you got to think about something. Maybe, and I can't believe I'm defending them, because you know what I'm about to say is probably not the truth. But what if after being, this is the first time in franchise history they've lost by 30 points back-to-back, right? It's the first time in franchise history that they had trailed by more than 40 points in back-to-back games ever, right? Maybe they wanted to see how the players reacted to him in practice. And maybe when they saw the players didn't react to him in practice the way they anticipated or should have, maybe they decided we have to fire the guy. Now, that's giving the Knicks too much credit, but there is an argument to be made. So if they came in dead after the losses they just suffered, then you got to move on from the coach.
Here's my thing. Who's to say, maybe Mike Miller might, I don't necessarily think that he's an NBA coach,
But I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of other coaches that ended up being really good coaches that we would have said wouldn't be good NBA coaches, all right? But he praised the Knicks' effort after they missed 13 of their final 14 shots.
Oh, you know, it's funny you say that, Lord. This, we're talking about the Saturday night game, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the final 4 minutes and 50 some odd seconds of that game, the Indiana Pacers didn't score a point, and the Knicks only went on a 5-0 run. The New York Knicks lost a game by 1 point where Julius Randle and Marcus Morris missed 25 shots. Wow.
Is this a $63 million man? I still think he's a nut, and he plays so you know what? I'm not saying he's not a good basketball player. I just think he needs a star with him.
The numbers dictate that the numbers dictate what's hurting him is the fact that Marcus Morris is not up and down player. He's not a fat. You know what I mean? He's a half court player, Marcus Morris, and Julius Randle is not. And if you look at it, Mike Borkanov of The Athletic actually had a great article on it, and he was showing that his usage is much different and it's much worse with Marcus Morris on the floor. His usage is much better. And his numbers are much better when Morris is off the floor. But the problem is the Knicks have such a bad bench, scoring unit that his numbers don't dictate how good he is when Marcus Morris is off the floor, if you know what I mean. So his numbers are better with Morris on the floor as far as like points and production, because obviously when Morris is on the floor, they're playing with the starters. He's playing with better talent. But his efficiency rating is much higher with Morris off the floor. And the Knicks need to figure that out. And if that's the case, maybe Morris has to get traded now. And if we're being honest, there's a reason Morris is on his fifth or sixth team, right?
That's true. And look, you can say that Knicks players quit on Fizdale, but they're really quitting on a dysfunctional thing created by Knicks management. Listen, the Knicks had the doors blown off in Milwaukee, 132-88. They followed that up with the 129-92 wipeout at the Garden at the hands of the Nuggets. And that was the end for Fizdale. But the Knicks gifted him one last practice. And let's talk about that, man, Mike. One last practice, and did not tell he was fired until that practice was completed. And he was joking around with management. They was actually joking around with him.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why I think something else has to... That practice must have been awful. But at the same time, Lloyd, here's the problem I have with this. Mike Miller is an assistant on his staff. Keith Smart was shown the door, and so was Fizdale. Mike Miller is an Allen Houston guy. He's a shill. He's a front office guy. Can't have those guys on a coaching staff. Because how do we know Mike Miller's not pulling the Jim Tom Sula behind John Harbaugh's back and saying, I can coach this team. This team is so much better. I see exactly what you guys are talking about with the, with the talent here, and they just need to be coached up a little more. They just need, you know what I mean? We have no idea. There's no place on the bench for guys like Mike Miller and someone else's staff. There's just not.
And this cycle of pathetic losing just continues. And this is a team, listeners, that I said would make the playoffs. The cycle of dysfunction continues. The rest of the NBA continues to laugh at the Knicks. I can't even tell you how many shows I listen to with dudes is just like Kendrick Perkins, all these guys. The Knicks have become the laughing stock of the NBA. Laughing stock. And how in the hell do you get anybody to come here when you're a laughing stock?
Well, that's also... Yeah, you got to think about something. That's also... Players drive that narrative, right? And you got to remember something. A lot of these players, LeBron James hate for the New York Knicks and Jim Dolan, that's personal hatred. You know what I mean? Like these other dudes that are talking, this is what they're supposed to do. What do you think when you watch ESPN and they have all of these, or example, you watched the Jets yesterday, right? Jay Feely is calling a New York Jets Miami Dolphin game. The whole time he's praising Ryan Fitzpatrick and saying that Sam Darnold should learn, can learn a few things from Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's played for 10 NFL teams. Why the hell would my franchise quarterback want to learn from a guy who's playing for 10 teams? The reason I'm bringing that up is because around the NBA, they want you to think. That's exactly the narrative they're trying to drive home. This is a dysfunctional organization. They're a joke of a franchise. Why would anybody ever want to go there? Well, look at how people talk about, and I'm going to give you a perfect example. Look how people talk about Dennis Smith Jr., how much of a joke he is, how bad of a player he is, right? When the Knicks drafted Frank Ntilikina, who was the guy that everyone was saying, how could you pass that kid up? How could you pass that kid up? Who was it?
Dennis Smith Jr.
So why should I listen to these people? Why should I listen to these experts? Why should I listen to Jason Williams talk about there's no superstar caliber type player on the New York Knicks when he's one of the guys that led that charge with Dennis Smith Jr.? You think I forgot that? I didn't forget that. Maybe the rest of the world did because they're going to buy into the joke of a franchise the Knicks are, but I'm not buying it. You said that kid was going to be a superstar. You can't take it back now.
I just, man. And you know, this team is going to get their brains beat in. You know, I mean, they gave Indiana a fight, but we're talking about Indiana. I don't think Indiana's that great of a team.
Yeah, they're without their superstar.
Yeah, Victor Oladipo didn't play.
And not for nothing, but you want to talk about how much coaching matters. Nate McMillan has a system, right? Nate McMillan has a history of being successful. He's 15-8 and was a 4 seed last year without his superstar. Why can't the Knicks finally make that choice? Like, go and get a guy that has a proven track record. I said this before about Fizdale, and you can be like, well, man, Mike, you never really liked him, so you didn't give him a fair chance. Maybe I didn't. But what did Fizdale prove anything I said about him wasn't true?
No, you're right. You called it. I was the one that convinced you to accept him. Imagine how I feel. I'm disgusted right now, listeners. Disgusted.
You can't tell me Frank Ntilikina rides the bench. This one rides the bench. Only the kids ride the bench. Kids can learn from the bench. Here's what I say to you. That kids can learn from the bench when the guys you're playing ahead of them are sending the right message. What message is Julius Randle sending them? What message is Marcus Morris sending? Marcus Morris on Saturday night was 8-for-11 at the end of the third quarter. He finished the game 9-for-17. Did you see at any point, like what's Marcus Morris teaching Kevin Knox about finishing? Right, because that's one of the things Fizdale said. We got to learn how to finish. That's why we went out and got grizzled vets to learn how to finish. Well, you going 1-for-6 and hogging the ball and not looking for the open guys, you ain't teaching him how to close. You're not teaching him anything. You're making him question why he's on the bench.
And, you know, you talk about being held, you know, accountable for your actions. And this is a roster that Mills and Perry went to Dolan and at least told Dolan that they feel could be competitive enough to push for that 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. And I felt the same way. Boy, is this blown up in their faces, and they need to be fired for it. And I'm a big supporter. I've never been a supporter of Mills. I thought Mills should have been shown the door when Phil Jackson was let go. I've been a supporter of Scott Perry. But Scott Perry is Steve Mills' puppet. And I just don't know how you fire a coach and you don't address the media after firing a coach, but you address the media the way they did games, you know what I'm saying, a couple weeks before then.
After losing a game.
After losing. How butt backwards is that?
Yeah. The issue I have with Scott Perry is GMs make mistakes. You know what I mean? Every move you make as a GM, it's not the right move, right? The guy he learned from, Joe Dumars. He, once upon a time, remember, he gave Ben Gordon and somebody else those huge contracts. Remember, those weren't good moves because he was trying to keep that window open, that window of success open from the Ben Wallace days. That was a bad move, right? But what I'm saying is Scott Perry here, as he's come here, and he just keeps doubling down on his guys: Elfrid Payton, Wayne Ellington, Herzogna, I mean, you name it, right? Anybody that he's just doubling down, like, I gotta be right. And it's wrong. It's not helping us. When I saw who was it? Giannis? No, Chris Middleton get that steal on Monday night, and I saw Wayne Ellington walking after him. When's the last time you saw someone get a steal and our guy didn't even hustle after him? He's just like, all right, well, you know, screw it. I'm just going to give up the easy dunk. Like, come on, man. Show some fight. Show some heart.
About players checking out. They checked out. And I said that weeks ago, listeners, that players checked out under Fizdale. And they've checked out under this organization, which is what me and Mad Mike are saying to you right now. And speaking of dysfunctionalism, Mad Mike, let's talk about Kyrie Irving. As Kyrie Irving sounded off on booing fans in a long emotional Instagram post after the Nets lost to the Celtics. And the Celtics beat the Nets that Wednesday night in what was supposed to be Kyrie Irving's first game back in Boston. And why I say what was supposed to be, I'm saying that because Kyrie Irving is injured. Listeners, what's new? What's new? I don't know, is he dealing with some kind of shoulder ailment, if I'm correct, or whatever the case may be? He's not the only
shoulder strain.
He's not the only player dealing with that. I'm pretty sure if you went to all the NBA players and asked them if they're dealing with injuries, that they can be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm not well enough to play. I guarantee you, more than half will say yeah. But they go out there and they lace him up. This right here, this is his year to show his character as an individual and what he can bring to a team without Kevin Durant. And he's failing miserably. Listen, the Nets have a better record without Kyrie Irving on the court than they do with Kyrie Irving on the court.
Yeah, but Lloyd, he's proven to you. How many times has he proven to us that he's not a leader on the court? How many times has he proven to us that he can't do it on his own? In Cleveland, he didn't do it until LeBron got there. He never did it in Boston. They went to game 7 of the conference championship without him. Remember? Where he not only did they go to game 7 without him, but remember, he didn't even sit on a bench for game 7. Remember, he decided to have a procedure done on his nose or whatever? Like, is that a leader? Is that someone that you want to go to war with? Or you know, anything at all? It's crazy to me. Absolute craziness to me.
You know,
but whatever.
I was watching that game, and fans were holding up signs. Coward signs. I mean, listen, I'm not a big fan of Boston's organization. I'm not a big fan of their fan base. I'm not even a big fan of the city. Dislike all three aspects of it. And then you throw in the Red Sox. Dislike everything about Boston. But when you sit there and you tell people that I'm coming back and you feed them all this nonsense and you turn around and do the complete opposite, what do you expect? What do you expect? And then you get upset? And shortly after the game, Irvin posted an extremely long 325-word post on Instagram in which he called out the fans, the NBA, the media, and the circus that surrounds it all. And I just want to read to you, listeners, and Mad Mike, what his tweet was. And this is quoted by Kyrie Irving. And this is what Kyrie Irving said. It happens all the time, and tonight just shows how sports entertainment will always be ignorant and obtrusive. It's one big show that means very, very little in the real world that most people live in, because there are actually things that matter that's going on within it. Like figuring out life that means more than a damn ball going into a hoop, or learning how to grow up being in the catfish bowl of society based on your popularity level as a person, or even dealing with becoming the leader of your family after someone's passing and not knowing how to deal with life after it happens. But this game of sports entertainment matters more than someone's mental health and well-being, right? All the real life things that happen to people every day. but they still have to perform for the NBA and its fans? Question mark, right? Question mark. It's all about doing it for the fans and organization that love you so much. Think again. It's a game, in all caps, he says. And it's promoted as a fandom experience for ticket buyers and viewers at home while defacing who people truly are as people, all caps. This spat out all over these media networks is valuable food for thought while they actually believe that their opinions hold weight to real cultural leaders that speak and act for change. One big gimmick with some smoke and mirrors, I'll always be the one that takes the stand and speaks the truth every time, though. A purposeful and spiritual-led life will always be the bigger and more meaningful thing than any sports arena or any entertainment space. This game isn't meant to be controlled and shown as a drama. It's meant to show the love. The love for the art is only damn thing that keeps the purest people in this giant sports entertainment circus. Don't all play for the game that's played in front of you as entertainment. It's what the hell? Oh my gosh! Did you even did you understand any of that nonsense?
First of all, Kyrie Irving is gonna mention himself with true leaders, true activists, true. Come on, let's stop. Now you want to talk about telling the truth. I was on this show the whole time, even when I thought he was going to be a Knick. I was on this show the whole time telling you, Lloyd, telling our listeners, he's lying to the world. He's not staying there. He just doesn't know how to deal with the media pressure. So he's going to tell everybody right now exactly what they want to hear in the moment because he doesn't know how to deal with the pressure, with the media. He doesn't know how to deal with people in his face, in his business. You want to know something? You want to be a superstar? This is the life you live as a superstar. Don't tell me all of a sudden you don't want the drama. The drama is why you guys are $5 billion, $10 billion industry. That's exactly why. The embarrassments, the acting a fool, all that nonsense, that leads to all the money in your pocket. Don't tell me all of a sudden you want us to go buy your shoes. You want us to put money in your pocket, right? You don't want Nike to cancel your endorsement deal. You need us. So how dare you lecture us on how we should act as fans?
And this is seriously. This is somebody
you, we want our money, right?
We wanted him to be a Knick. How crazy. Although you say you prefer Kemba Walker over him, who's actually having a better season with the Boston Celtics. And the Celtics have a better record with Kemba Walker than they did with Kyrie Irving.
Well, my preference was actually I'd rather sign Kawhi Leonard and...
No, but I'm talking about of those two. I know you mentioned Kemba Walker instead of you would take Kemba Walker over Kyrie Irving. It was just that the only way we would get Kevin Durant is if Kyrie Irving came.
Yeah, I think, honest to God, I think any New York fan would tell you, I think to this day, any New Jersey, Brooklyn Nets fan would tell you, they'd rather have D'Angelo Russell over Kyrie Irving. But everyone was willing to say, hey, I'll take Kyrie Irving if it means getting Kevin Durant. But here's the thing, Lord. If Kevin Durant is not the same player, was it worth dealing with this knucklehead, this nut job? This only works if Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. Facts. It doesn't work otherwise. He's not. And that was the other thing. We all knew it. We all knew he's not built for a major media market. He's not built for New York. He's not built for Boston. He's not built for Chicago. He's built for somewhere. Not only is he might not even be built for Cleveland. He's not built for a place where he's the sole face of that team at the moment. He can't handle that. It only worked out because LeBron James is not afraid of the media. He's not afraid of criticism. Oh, by the way, I got a little something for LeBron James himself, too.
Go get off and fire it off before we hit this commercial break.
I'm going to fire that off later.
All right. Well, there you have it, listeners. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk some baseball, and we're going to talk a little bit of football. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Matt Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Matt Mike Sports Talk Show. before we talk about the New York Giants, Mad Mike, and Eli Manning starting a football game later this evening, let's talk about the New York Jets, who pulled out a win over the Miami Dolphins at MetLife Stadium yesterday, okay? And instead of going into it about the Jets, I just want to push straight forward to giving the Jets their grades. Okay, and let's start with the offense, Mad Mike. And I thought the Jets moved the ball decently in the first half, but I thought that they struggled in the second half. The first four drives, you know, the second half ended with an interception, a turnover on downs, a pair of punts, respectively in that order, listeners. They managed a game-winning drive with some help from the Dolphins' pass interference penalty. Sam Darnold, I believe he, what was he, 20 or 36, Matt Mike? 270 yards, two touchdowns, one interception, 86.6 passing rating, made some poor decisions, and he got away with a few, but he also made some really, really good throws. Okay, Robbie Anderson has 7 catches for 116 yards, and he continues to play solid football. Bilal Powell has 74 yards on 19 rushes, and he played well in place of Le'Veon Bell. I'm going to get an offensive C+, man, Mike.
Yeah, I gave the offense a C. They got out to a 16-6 lead. Adam Gase seemed to be in control. First drive should have ended in a touchdown. Demaryius Thomas drops a wide-open pass. And actually, their third drive, I believe it was, also ended in a field goal after Demaryius Thomas dropped pass. So I thought that it could have been a very explosive day, but play calling in the second half, questionable. You can probably say, Lloyd, that it was due to the interception Darnold threw, but if Darnold's going to throw an interception and we want him to move on past that and keep playing the game as a coaching staff, you got to move past that and keep calling a good game too. You can't just go into a shell either. So from that standpoint, I thought it was a mixed bag. I gave him a C.
All right, so now let's move on to this defense. And I felt that this wasn't the Jets' best defensive performance of the year, but they did a great job in the red zone. Got to give credit where credit is due. The Dolphins, they didn't score a touchdown in the red zone, kicking field goals instead of scoring touchdowns. And the patchwork secondary did not give up a play of more than 25 yards. Ryan Fitzpatrick was 21-37, 245 yards, one interception. He did more damage with his legs. He had 8 rushes for 65 yards, you know, to the Jets than his arm. James Burgess, 13 tackles, was all over the field. Again, kudos to Greg Williams for, what's that saying, making something out of nothing? He continues.
Being able to adjust.
Yes. Yes. Excellent job by him all season, man. All season. Okay, with that being said, I'm going to give the defense a B because of that.
Yeah, I gave the defense an A, and you're going to be like, man, Mike, why? How the hell could you give a team that gave up 7 field goals a D, an A? Here's why I gave them an A. I thought that there was one really bad call. They called Sam Burgess, I want to believe it was, or Neville Hewitt, one of them, got called for pass interference on an interception, which I thought was a bogus call. The announcers actually felt the same way. He didn't do anything to impede the receiver from catching the ball or knocking him off his lane. They called the holding on it or said he wrapped him. Not really. That should have ended an interception for a team that already had one. That should have ended an interception. Then I believe on one of that led to a field goal. And then on another drive that led to a field goal, they had another issue where the same dude, Burgess, actually, he makes a hell of a play. He dislodges the ball from Albert Wilson, hit him with his shoulder and everything, but they call Albert Wilson defenseless. Now, I don't understand what a defender's supposed to do to break up a pass if he can't hit a guy with a shoulder. They said that, oh, he came up around the chest, neck area. But Albert Wilson is a really small guy. James Burgess is not a really small guy. So in order to take him out there, he's got to go really low, which is also a flag. So what you're telling me is my linebacker can't make a play on a slot receiver anymore. So if they allow him to make that play, Miami doesn't get a field goal. And me and you are having this conversation. I'm saying, all right, well, now all of a sudden they gave up 15 points. They didn't need a last second. They have 2 turnovers. They had a few sacks. This guy still has a couple, you know, 100 yards. But I'll take that. If I need to make my pocket passing quarterback a scrambler, then at least I know my defensive line did their job. So I gave him an A. I grade on a curve.
Okay, so now let's move on to special teams. And kicker Sam Ficken was the hero with his 44-yard field goal and also had field goals of 42 and 37 yards. The only negative was the missed extra point, you know, which was the result of a bad snap. So, you know, the Jets had no penalties on four kickoff returns, which is notable. So I'm going to give special teams an A, man, Mike. No, matter of fact, I'm sorry. I'm going to give them a B-plus because of that mixed extra, the botched snap on the extra point. So I'm going to bump that down to a B-plus.
I was going to say, I gave them a B simply because I happen to think that that missed extra point kind of, I'm not going to say changed the game, but it kind of set the tone for the end of the game, one of the tone setters. I don't even necessarily think it was a bad snap. I think the announcer said it was. I just think the holder dropped the ball. It hit him in the hands. It never bounced. It hit him in the air. So I just think the holder dropped it. But it still looked like Ficken had some time to correct the kick. But whatever, be it this, I would like to see the Jets get a few more touchbacks instead of chancing, you know, tempting fate with some of these runbacks that they've been giving up. But, you know, whatever. That's strategy, I guess.
All right, so now let's move on to the coaching. And it's going to be interesting to see, listeners, how Mad Mike feels about this comment that I'm about to make. Because I feel that the Jets are still playing hard. And I feel that this team could have packed it in after last week's loss to the Bengals. And I don't know if you want to give Adam Gase credit for keeping the team together. His play calling was so-so. You know, I thought it was stronger in the first half. Was so-so, very questionable in the second half. And the decision to go for it on fourth down was not good. It wasn't a good decision and nearly cost the Jets that game. And Greg Williams, again, listeners, deserves a ton of credit for finding a way to play to get things done with a bunch of backups. And the defense was not great on Sunday, but they kept the Dolphins out of the end zone. And because of Greg Williams, I'm going to give coaching a B.
Because of him, I gave them a D minus.
Oh,
simple
God.
As that. I gave them a D minus because of him. And here's why. I'm glad you mentioned that because a lot of people totally overlooked that. This team was up at the time 16-12 when they were they decided to go for it on fourth down. And the reason that they're going for it on fourth down was so baffling to me was because on third down they called a rollout pass. And Sam threw it to the 1 yard line. So if you, to me, it was just like, at that point, if you're going to go for the jugular and try to throw a touchdown on third and one, then you've obviously made the decision that you're going to kick the field goal. You're just going to take the points, which, by the way, at 19-12 would have put you up an entire touchdown. So the math also made sense to me. Go for the touchdown on third down and kick the field goal and take the 7-point lead. But this coach, for some reason, he's an idiot. This coach just decides, I'm going to go for it. So I'm going to throw for the touchdown on third down, and I'm going to run up the middle on fourth down. He's a jackass, man. He is. And I don't know if we consider that a curse on the show. Oh, and if we do, I apologize for it. But he is. He's just a jackwagon. And his play calling, suspect. He constantly doesn't make the second half adjustments. Do you realize that the Jets, who scored 16 points in the first half, only scored 3 points in the second half until the game-winning field goal? Do you realize that? This is the Dolphins. We're not talking about the Patriots defense. We're not talking about the Jacksonville defense. But we're not talking about any of those tough games they played early on. We're talking about the Miami Dolphins, who embarrassed them in Miami. And if not for a by the way, Lloyd, what the hell is a pass interference nowadays?
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
But you know what I mean? If not for that gift wrap pass interference call, that wasn't a pass interference call 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden is now, you would have lost. You would have lost again to the Miami Dolphins. And Lloyd, one other thing, and my last thing on this. If you don't think that locker room was paying attention to the fact that last week we faced the worst run defense in all of football and we decided that we were going to pass the entire game with a healthy Le'Veon Bell, and then today, playing the worst pass defense in football, we decided we were going to run the ball 35 times with Bilal Powell and Ty Montgomery. That's the things about this coach that they hated him for in Miami. He needs to realize players see through that crap. There's a reason why he turned a post game on an ex-player like Ray Lucas and an ex-player like Bart Scott are calling you out for it. Because you don't have to look in the camera and say, I don't like Le'Veon Bell and I don't think he's a good player. You say it with your play calls. F for the offensive coach. If not for Greg Williams, I'd give him an F minus.
All right. There you have it. Now let's talk about the other New York football team, Mad Mike, and listeners, as Eli Manning is starting for the New York Giants as Daniel Jones is dealing with an ankle injury and he was wearing a boot. Some people think that the reason why Eli Manning is starting because this is, in theory, the final home game for Eli Manning as a New York Giant. So that's why he's starting. But let's talk about the coaches in the front office, because honesty won't be lacking when the Giants owners sit down at the end of the year to determine this team's future, all right? Coach Pat Shurmur and general manager Dave Gettleman are nearing the end of their second year together with the New York Giants and have seen absolutely zero progress. They went 5-11 last year, and the Giants, they're in another lost season at 2-10 with the heat turned up on their decision makers. And both Steve Tisch, he's gone on record saying it has been a very frustrating season. Very frustrating. He also was quoted saying his partners, we have to be very honest with each other about where we see this team going into the 2020 season. But Coach Shurmur, he has insisted that there's been progress being made behind the scenes. But it remains to be seen how much patience that will buy these Giants owners. And they was asked if for a vote of confidence for Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman. And their response was that those decisions and conversations are going to be made behind closed doors. And this is a team that opted not to cut Eli Manning in the offseason, only for him to be benched after two games in favor of Daniel Jones. The quarterback, mind you, listeners, that Dave Gettleman drafted with the number 6 pick has gone through growing pains while showing promise at times, all right? He's one of the many young players the Giants have been, you know, learning on the fly through their rebuild. When is this payoff? When is it going to come? This guy is ruining this organization, Matt Mike. And I'm talking about Dave Gettleman. You signed Odell Beckham Jr.
Big time assist.
You sign him and you trade him away. All right. And you criticize that pick. I try to see some light in it. But you criticize that move. You trade away Vernon. I thought that move wasn't bad because the Giants' offensive line, which isn't, it's amazing that their offensive line is worse this year than it was last year. I thought the move was okay. And then you trade for Leonard Williams. You're in a rebuilding phase. Your most important thing or chip that you're holding is draft picks. And what does Gettleman do? He trades away a third round draft pick and a possible fifth round draft pick for Leonard Williams, who's the same Leonard Williams, as Mad Mike has stated, that was on the New York Jets. And Carl Banks has even came out and criticized his organization. Again, I say it over and over and over again, listeners. The Giants have the wrong personnel for the style of football that they are trying to play. They don't have the personnel to run a damn 3-4 defense. And maybe Leonard Williams might be better in a 4-3 defense. He might be. I think he's a 4-3 player. I think he's a 4-3 defensive lineman. I think he needs to have somebody on his inside and somebody on his outside to be effective. And the Giants are not doing that for him. And how bad would Getsman
well, like
look,
I
man?
Said, man, you took a guy who proved to you, proved to the world he couldn't play a 3-4, and you traded the third round and a fifth or fourth round draft picks for a guy to come play your 3-4. Never made any sense.
And how idiotic is Gettleman going to look if they don't re-sign Williams? I wouldn't re-sign him. Definitely not for the money he's probably thinking he deserves. But then by letting him walk...
Well, even if he didn't think he deserved it, Lloyd, he's going to ask for it now, and he's going to squeeze them because they're not in position to say no.
My point exactly. That's where I was getting at. That's exactly where I was going with this. Now the Giants pretty much, I mean, they do have a choice not to sign him. But again, how dumb would this organization or this front office look if they didn't re-sign him? So now Leonard Williams is in the driver's seat because fans are going to say, what? You gave away a third-round pick for a player that you're not even going to re-sign? For a player that you let walk?
Well, here's the other thing that I think, personally. I think that Dave Gettleman made a bad fit with Dexter Lawrence. I think Dexter Lawrence is a run-stuffing nose tackle in a 3-4, and you don't take those guys in the first round because they're dime a dozen, and that's just fast. So in order to try to unleash Dexter Lawrence in the pass game, you go and you try to get a guy who the Jets have always made this excuse for Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams is among the league leaders in double teams. He's among the league leaders in quarterback hits, right? Not sacks, but hits. So I'm going to trade for that guy because that guy will now draw double teams and he'll open up the lanes and he'll open up the field for Dexter Lawrence to look like the first round pick that I made him. Now, it doesn't work, right? Because Dexter Lawrence is exactly what he is, a run stuffing, nose tackle, big man in the middle of the line. And all that talk about Leonard Williams being double team, Lloyd, it was just smoked by the Jets defense. It's just smoked by the Jets franchise, front office, because why? The Jets don't want egg on their face either for drafting this guy number 6, and his talent has never matched his draft position. It's basically Gettleman trying to fix 2 mistakes. You know what I mean? With one move. But like I said, I think that he got a big time assist this week because I think Ron Rivera is going to be the next Giant coach.
I won't be mad at that. But, I mean, again, you know, we're talking about – we talk about how cancerous the Knicks organization is. But the one thing – the difference between the Knicks organization and the Giants organization, although, the Giants organization is cancerous as well, at least the Giants have 2 owners that are respected. At least the Giants owners are respected. And the Giants can probably still get top-tier free agents to come to New York, whereas that doesn't seem to be possible with the New York Knicks. But Tish and Mara they have to cut this organization free of the cancer that's in it right now. And what I mean by cutting it free, you got to get rid of Gettleman, you got to get rid of Shermer, you got to get rid of Betcher, you got to get rid of all those dudes, man, all of them. If you're going to bring in Rivera, which I wouldn't be mad at that, you got to get rid of, if you bring in Romero, obviously you got to fire Shermer, but then you got to fire Betcher, and you got to get rid of Gettleman. You got to bring in fresh blood, man. You got to. It's not working. This dude is destroying his organization before our very eyes, listeners. I'm talking about Betcher with the moves that he's making. And sidetrack, what about Odell Beckham Jr. going around telling players, get me the hell out of Cleveland?
You can't. Where is he going to go? They just, look, he hated playing for a statue in Eli Manning, right? Now, they sent him to play with exactly the kind of guy that he asked for. A young, mobile quarterback who can make things happen with his legs, has the accuracy, the arm strength, and the balls to throw the ball up or to try to make the big splash play. That's what Odell wanted. Now what? Now what? Why does he want out? Because Jarvis Landry looks like a better receiver, maybe not the same highlight reel guy, but a better, more complete receiver.
Yeah, man.
Because it's more of a security blanket.
It's amazing how some of the best wide receivers in football are wearing their welcomes out with teams in the NFL. Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham. He's going to get to the point where nobody's going to want Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, I think he's talented enough where somebody will take a flyer on him if Cleveland decides to get rid of him. But he just signed that contract.
Yes, it's just going to be even more dead money. That's the thing about it. It's just going to be more dead money for Cleveland. The Giants already have a dead cap hit because of him. But at the same time, do you want it? After what you saw Antonio Brown do to not only the Patriots, but to the Pittsburgh Steelers and to the Oakland Raiders all in one offseason. That's the thing that no one's talking about. When this offseason started, Antonio Brown was a Steeler. He then got traded to the Raiders until the Raiders had to move on from him. That's going to be Odell Beckham. That's exactly what it's going to be. I think the league is realizing that. I mean, look at what Pittsburgh's doing without him. Pittsburgh's 7 wins without their starting quarterback and without their star, in quotes, wide receiver. That's because Mike Tomlin is finally getting the respect he deserves because he's a hell of a coach. But I'm telling you right now, Mike Tomlin would not touch Odell Beckham with 10-foot pole. And I don't know how many other teams would. I don't.
And that's the sad part because he is a talented young man. Can't question the talent that he has. Or is his ability on that damn football field. But yeah, he ain't been doing much dancing this year.
No.
And maybe he's realizing, or maybe he realized, or you know, has realized that the best place for him to be was in New York. Wherever he goes, listeners, wherever he goes, he is not going to get the same type of attention. I'm talking about, like, you know, recognition with the media and all that kind of, like he got with New York. Not going to happen anyplace else.
He wanted to go to L.A. He wanted to be in L.A. But let me tell you something.
And you know why?
What did
because
you see from Jared Goff this year?
He probably felt that would be the place where he would go and get the same type of limelight that he got when he was a New York Giant.
Correct.
Newsflash, correct. L.A. and New York is not the same. Not the same. Odell Beckham Jr. is what he is because of the New York Giants organization and playing in a great city in New York. Not the other way around.
And because of the media. Because of the New York media. Because in New York, if you're playing for... He could be the same exact talent playing in for the Jets. And we're not having that conversation about him. Like you said, it's because he was a New York Giant. And the New York media tends to favor the New York Giants. If a New York Jet acted the way Odell Beckham reacted, do you think the stories would be the same way? You think they would? You know who he reminds me of? He acts like Santonio Holmes did. Does Santonio Holmes make any friends into New York media? Anybody in New York media make excuses for Santonio Holmes like they did Odell Beckham? And even in saying that, I still think Dave Gettleman made a terrible trade.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I tried to find some good in that trade. I tried to find some good in the trade, listeners. If you go back to the show, or if you heard the show, or remember the show, I tried to find good in that. And I tried to find good in it because it was my damn team. I had to trick myself into finding some good about that trade. But man, Mike called it. Where's Peppers at right now? He ain't even on the damn football field.
The reason I hated it was I just looked at the trade, Lloyd. Like it was when you take two trades with the Cleveland Browns and you look at what you got. I was just like, you got destroyed. I mean, how do you win games in the NFL? One with a pass rush, defensive, offensive line, right? The Giants got. What, a safety? After they let Landon Collins walk, they got a safety in the trade? Come on, man. So they got the one offensive lineman. But They lost their superstar receiver, the only guy that has the ability on their roster to stretch the field, which we see. And they lost their only pass rusher. They made their life so much harder by those two trades. And they got a first-round pick, but what did they do? We just already said it. They went and drafted a second-round talent in the first round. They reached. They reached twice.
And that's all Gettleman.
But like I said, Ron Rivera will come. He'll work out. Because remember, Ron Rivera was there when Gettleman drafted Christian McCaffrey, and he's going to say, look what I did with McCaffrey. Imagine what I could do with a talent like Saquon Barkley. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to work out. He's going to say, look at the history we have. We won four division titles together. Yada, 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 yada.
I'm not mad at Rivera coming here, but got to get rid of Gettleman. Got to, dude. They got to. But let's move on to a little bit of baseball. Matt Mike and listeners, it'd be interesting to see what Matt Mike has to say about this. Because we all know the prized possession in free agency this offseason is one Garrett Cole, who pitched for the Houston Astros. And there's rumors that are starting to fly, Matt Mike and listeners, particularly that he has already decided upon the New York Yankees. All right, and this was reported by insider John Heyman. He tweeted out on Saturday morning that the New York Yankees have their total focus on Garrett Cole and they don't want to be denied. And then shortly after that, Peter Gammons came out with a tweet saying, John is right, they were not denied. Dodgers and Angels will learn soon. And of course, Gammons' tweet, you know, is implying that Heyman was correct when saying that the Yankees weren't denied. What do you think about that? Like, I wasn't, my reaction to this was that I don't necessarily know if I was expecting Peter Gammons to break the news. So I was curious, you know, to how factual this was. But Gammons, let's point out, listeners, that Gammons has been long respected in the business. So you might have to take him seriously.
Yeah, I mean, if John Heyman is writing it with all of his ties to the New York Yankees and as prominent as he's become in baseball reporting altogether, I'd say that that's pretty serious to begin with. I think that Peter Gammons, I don't want to say giving him the stamp of approval, but for lack of a better term at the moment, kind of stamping it with his own approval. I think that kind of would like, as a Yankee fan, for me to feel like it's cemented. But I'll tell you that a friend of the show, Joe Rivera, texted me and said that the offer is 7 years, $245 million, some odd dollars, which comes out to somewhere like $35 million a year. But he believes that the Yankees are going to have to give the eighth year to finalize this. So I don't know if we're out of the woodworks yet. $35 million, a lot to offer up for a pitcher. It's a lot for a pitcher to turn down a year. But at the same time, you know how contract negotiations work. If you want 8 years, that annual average is going to come down a few. If you want 9 years, it's going to come down even more. If you want 10 years, we're not even going to talk to you.
Do you think that, let's just say the Yankees pull this off, which I'm not getting my hopes up high. Because the stars seem to be aligned, and I'm just a jinx when it comes to that. So I'm going to say that the Yankees, you know, are not going to sign him. But what happens, you know, if he does sign with New York, Matt Mike? Did our good friend Joe say that the Yankees close the checkbook and they don't go after another starter? You know, obviously, him and Strasburg are the two prize possessions, you know, top tier free agents. But then you have the middle tier. The Baumgartners, the Zach Wheelers. Do the Yankees then take a run at Madison Baumgartner or Zach Wheeler? Obviously, I think Zach
Wheeler. Well, Zach Wheeler's off the market.
Huh?
No, Zach Wheeler's off the market.
Oh, is he?
Zach Wheeler's, yeah. He signed Philadelphia 5 years, 118.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then actually have another source that's not Joe Rivera that is tied really close to the Phillies, who tells me that Steven Strasburg is looking at 7 years, $240 million, which would make sense why Cole's contract offer was at somewhere $7,245. So, yeah, I heard Philadelphia is also pretty damn serious about Steven Strasburg, even after getting Wheeler. So we'll see how that goes. I know that the Yankees made an offer to Brett Gardner in terms of contract having been released. So we don't know if it's another one-year deal. We don't know if it's a two-year deal. But we knew that he was going to get the offer simply because Aaron Hicks won't be available until sometime in May or June of next year, maybe longer with the way that he heals, because we know that he's an injury-prone guy. So we'll see. We knew that Gardner was going to get at least another year in pinstripes.
But I'm saying, do you think the Yankees go after Bumgarner? I'm hearing reports that they may try to trade for Robbie Ray, the left-hander from the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Starter. It depends on how much money the offer to Gardner is. You know what I mean? Remember, Brett Gardner only made $8 million last year. If Brett Gardner is going to get a raise, then I don't know how much money after you sign Cole you have left to lock up anybody else. I mean, if he's going to sign again for $8 million, then maybe you do have some extra money. That I don't know. We don't know what they're going to do at shortstop. I wouldn't trade for Robbie Ray simply because you don't know what you're doing at shortstop. You might have to trade for shortstop. You don't know if you can keep Didi around. If you don't re-sign Didi, then where do you get a shortstop on the market? You have to trade for one. So trading for Robbie Ray only makes your farm system weaker. It only kind of takes you out of position to get a shortstop. You know what I mean? Think about that, Lloyd, right?
Yeah.
Lindor goes to the Dodgers. Now all of a sudden you can't even talk about.
Did he go that way, or are we just saying that hypothetically?
No, he didn't. But what I'm saying, if he goes to the Dodgers, now you can't even talk about Corey Seager because you traded for Robbie Ray.
Right.
Not smart. So.
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens, listeners, and we got more to report on this. Hopefully, by the time we do next week's show, you know, Gerrit Cole have signed somewhere, and we could talk about that some more. But that moves us to the point of the show that we all love, and this is where we hear Mad Mike's Rant of the Week, is where he lets us know how disgusted he is with something going on in sports entertainment or life in general sometimes. So, Mad Mike, what you got for us this week?
Man, LeBron James. LeBron James to me is like Kyrie Irving. I wish he would shut up. Like, you know, I you did a nice thing. I don't know if you heard the comments or saw what happened with him and the Utah Jazz, where LeBron James gave his shoes. They blew out the Jazz, and he gave his shoes away to two fans. By the way, they were in Utah, so he gave away his sneakers to two visiting fans. But he after a block, he runs out on the court celebrating like a madman in his socks. And the announcers were saying that was disrespectful to the Utah Jazz. And he went out to defend himself. Imagine, you know, verbatim, but, you know, imagine doing your job to the highest ability to have two kids who idolize you. You give them your sneakers, you make their day, to then be criticized by announcers for enjoying a great play your teammate made. I got you. I got all that. I really, really do. But we're New York Knicks fans, right? We've seen him disrespect our court by blowing us out, and then on the bench he's playing flip a bottle or whatever the hell you call that game, right? We've seen LeBron do this numerous times. He disrespects. He does this all, you know what I mean? He just does. And then he goes out and defends himself afterwards. I got a real problem with this, man. I do. I've never seen a player who's so great. He is. He's great. But he routinely disrespects other teams. And then goes to astronomical levels to defend himself. Lloyd, have you ever seen that happen? This guy was running out on the court to under the basket to high five guys and jump up and down crazy in socks. Like, yo, you took yourself out of the game, right? You gave the sneakers away. So stay on the bench. Celebrate on the bench with your teammates. What are you doing? You are disrespecting their floor. You are.
Yeah, I saw the highlight of that where he ran out and I heard the Utah Jazz announcers saying how disrespectful it was.
Remember something. Go watch that highlight again. It wasn't during the timeout that he did it. He did it while the game was on, while the game was live. Facts.
Yeah.
The play never stopped. He was doing that while the game was still going. It was disrespectful. If you were playing ball and someone came and disrespected your home court like that, what are you doing as another player? But because everybody respects him so much, everyone accepts that's just who he is. That's how he does things. But at the same time, let's not act like our game is the same. There is no level of respect nowadays. Everyone's doing that.
Oh, there you have it, listeners. And before we close out the show, there's something else that had crossed my mind, Matt Mike, that I was thinking of while you was talking about LeBron James. And I can't really remember what it was. I lost track of my thought with it. But with that being said, listeners, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. Me and Matt Mike want to thank you for sticking with us and listening. We hope you had a great holiday Thanksgiving. And we have so much more. There's always such stuff to talk about in sports, man. That's why I love sports so much. But there'll be so much more for us to talk about in next week's show. So until then, listeners, have a safe and blessed week. Oh, shout out to our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, also, you know, for keeping this thing rocking out. So listeners, have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike can see you in 7 days. So with that being said, yo, Mad Mike and Ayo, let's get up out this place, baby.